The following program is a Nightingale Conant production for Simon & Schuster Audio.
The acceptance of the one-minute manager and the three secrets, one-minute praising, one-minute reprimanding, and one-minute goal-setting, as easy to understand and use concepts has almost been complete throughout the world in the last year and a half. Over 2 million hardback books have been sold in the United States and 18 language translations around the world. With that kind of record, you might want to ask what more needs to be done. The reality is that most companies spend all their time trying to find the next new management concept and never follow up what they just taught their people. It is for this very reason that I decided to join with Robert Lauber, an outstanding productivity improvement expert, on the sequel to The One-Minute Manager, which we are calling Putting the One-Minute Manager to Work. Bob and his colleagues for the last 10 years have essentially been implementing the three secrets of the one-minute manager in their productivity improvement programs and saving companies literally millions of dollars in performance in all kinds of areas, whether we be talking about safety, productivity, quality, absenteeism, all kinds of areas of improvement. Now, putting the one-minute manager to work is another parable. But this parable is about a veteran manager who reads the one-minute manager and can't argue with the three secrets. After all, he says, you know, one-minute goal setting really makes sense. People really need to know what they're being asked to do, and they also need to know what good behavior looks like. He certainly couldn't argue with the one-minute praising, which is the second secret. He said, after all, people ought to be caught doing things right. We have this great tendency to catch people doing things wrong. And then the third secret, the one-minute reprimand, seemed to make sense, too. After all, sometimes you have to give negative feedback to people, but you want to do it in such a way that they concentrate on what they did wrong rather than how you treated them. And so the veteran manager thinks the three secrets make sense, but what he wants to know is, if I use them, will it really make a difference where it counts, in the bottom line, in performance? So putting the one-minute manager to work is about his search for the answer to that question. What I want to do on this tape is tell you about the two systems, the two procedures that he learns that are the key to taking the one-minute manager concepts and secrets and putting them to work. The first thing he learns about is the ABCs of management. One of the questions that we have gotten from people is that sometimes they get confused on when they ought to do what when they're dealing with the three secrets. And the ABCs of management really deals with that particular question and problem. In fact, it's a way to help people in the sequencing of the use of the three secrets. A stands for activator. It's what a manager does before performance. It's anything that happens before somebody begins to behave, which is B, or performance. Some people don't like you to talk about behavior, so let's talk about performance. So A stands for activator, B stands for behavior or performance, and then C stands for consequence, or what a manager does after performance. Now, it's real clear that with an activator occurring before somebody engages in some particular performance area, that one-minute goal setting would be a very important part of the activator process. In fact, have you ever played poker? You know how before you get in a poker game, what you have to do is ante up. And in management, the ante is one-minute goal setting. because without clear goals, you aren't even in the management game. Remember the two parts of 1 minute goal setting. People need to understand what they're being held accountable for, and secondly, they need to know what performance standards look like. So 1 minute goal setting is a very important activator. In fact, it's probably the most important one. I do get questions from people, though. Is there any other things that should occur before you can expect somebody to engage in good performance? Two friends and colleagues of mine, Paul Hersey and Marshall Goldsmith, developed an interesting model that they call the Achieve Model. And I like to use the Achieve Model to kind of be a good checklist for what kind of things you have to think about before you can expect somebody to perform well. A in the Achieve Model stands for ability. The first question you want to ask when you want somebody to perform is, do they have the skills and ability to do it? If they don't, what do you have to do? Well, you have to ante up training. In other words, you got to train them. Training is something that should happen before, then after. In other words, don't wait till people are already a failure or not performing at all and say, well, we ought to really train them now. So training has to happen before. And it's answering the question of ability. If ability is not an issue, then training is not necessary as an activator. C in the Achieve Model stands for clarity. And clarity really has to do with the first part of 1 minute goal setting. What it really means is, are people clear in what they're being asked to do? Are expectations clear? Okay, so C stands for clarity. H stands for help. And what you're saying with help is, am I giving the person the kind of attention and coaching that they're going to need to perform well? And let's agree on that ahead of time rather than after the fact. So I'm not only going to talk about coaching, but do they have the resources, both financial and equipment and material? Are they getting the help they need? Let's agree on that ahead of time. What time is it going to take for me as a manager? What am I committed to do? What kinds of things do they need? So help is the H part of the Achieve Model. I stands for incentive. And what that has to do is, if a person's performance improves or if they reach the standards that are established, what's in it for them? What's the incentive? You might say, well, why would you want to figure that out ahead of time? It is much easier to do it at that time, because then when the performance occurs, the delivery of the incentive is really clear. If they perform, they get it. If they don't, they don't get it. And it's much better to agree on that ahead of time. So I stands for incentive. E stands for environment. Are you providing the environment that they need to be a good performer? If you want somebody to be creative, well, maybe you shouldn't have them in a noisy environment where they have modular walls and that kind of thing. If you want somebody to be a top salesperson and they're in the South in the summer, you better put an air conditioner in their car. Do they have the kind of physical surroundings that they're going to need to be the kind of performer you want them to be? V stands for validity. What that means is, do they understand why you're asking them to do what you're asking them to do? I mean, we no longer have the power that we used to have as kings and queens and all that. People would say, why do I have to do that? Or, you know, why am I doing that? And you'd say, you know, because I said so. And if they didn't, you know, you could cut off their head or whatever. We just don't have the power in organizations today. There's so many other power factors, including the government, legal factors, environmentalists, all kinds of things that are impacting our power, so that we have to be much more rational with people. And validity has to do with why. Do they understand why they're doing? Do they understand the reasons for it? And then finally, the last E in the Achieve Model is evaluation. Do they know how they're going to be evaluated? Do they know what good performance looks like? This is that second part of the one-minute goal setting. So the Achieve model is a really nice checklist to say, have I done all the things I need to do ahead of time? It's just like getting in a car. In order to start the car, what are the things that you have to do? Well, you got to make sure you get it into neutral. You got to take the brake off. You got to get the key in the ignition and all. And so all the activators are saying is, are we ready to get the kind of performance that we want? Once a person has been activated, in other words, all of the before things have been done, then they are off and starting their performance. And that's what behavior is all about. Examples of behavioral performance is writing report, selling a shirt, coming to work on time, missing a deadline, typing a letter, making a mistake, filling an order. These are all examples of behavior or performance. Now let's look at the C. The C is what happens after somebody performs. Let me just back up 1 second and say, make one comment about the behavior. Some people ask us, what about attitudes and feelings? Do you count those? Well, attitudes and feelings are important because they often have a tremendous influence on behavior, but they are not behavior themselves. In other words, we do not deal with morale problems. Unless you can tell us what poor morale results in behavior. Are people coming to work late? Are the quality of the products down? What is happening? See, so attitudes and feelings are important, but since they're behind the eyeballs, they're in the head, and we can't observe and measure them, we don't use them. Behavior has to do with what you can observe and measure. Now, consequence is what happens after somebody engages in some behavior. Now, the second two secrets of the one-minute manager obviously fall in to the consequence area, one-minute praising and one-minute reprimand. Now, with the one-minute praising, that is a positive consequence. And remember, with the praising, you got to be immediate. You got to tell them when they did something right. Don't save it up for a holiday. Be specific. You got your report in on time on Friday, and it was well written, and I used it with John in a meeting today, and it made you and I and our whole department look good. And then you share your feelings. Let me tell you how I feel about it. I feel super. I appreciate your efforts. I'm proud to have you on my team. So the praising is an example of a positive consequence. The one-minute reprimand is an example of a negative consequence. It's not, in other words, it's something that somebody would rather not have if they had a choice. A positive consequence they'd choose if they had a choice. With a one-minute reprimand, remember there's four key things involved. First, when do you reprimand somebody? Right away. Don't save it up for a holiday. Second, you got to be specific on a reprimand. Don't get into that old marital trick, you know, where your spouse says, I'm really angry at you, and you say, well, why, honey? And they said, you know, if you don't know, and now you're in there guessing and all, and they'll beat you up because every time you mention something, they'll say, well, I forgot about that. So you want to be really specific. You didn't get your report in on time. Then you share how you feel. I'm angry. This isn't like you. Everybody else got their reports in on time. It screwed up my whole analysis. So you really share your feelings. Are you angry, frustrated, disappointed? Where are you? And then finally, you end the reprimand with a praising by saying, you're better than that. You're one of my best people. You know, you normally get your reports in on time. That's why I'm angry with you. So the reprimand is a negative consequence. But what you're trying to do with a negative consequence, like a reprimand, is to get the person to stop doing a behavior that they're doing and get back to their good performance. Now, there is a third consequence besides a positive or a negative one, and that's no consequence, no response. You don't do anything. That is probably the most popular response of all. I mean, in fact, we have found that the American way of managing is that when you do a good job, nobody says anything. When you screw up, they hit you. It's really the leave alone zap, leave alone zap. But leave alone, paying no attention to behavior, is a very common occurrence. Now let's look what happens, whether a consequence is positive, negative, or no response at all. If you do something and you get a positive consequence, and there are other positive consequences besides praising, things like promotions, things like new opportunities, more responsibilities, better pay. There's all kinds of positive consequences. But if you get a positive consequence, what do you think is going to happen to the frequency of that behavior? Do you think it's going to go up or down? It's going to go up. The tendency is it increases in frequency when a performance or behavior is followed by a positive consequence. What about a negative consequence? What happens when your performance is followed by something negative? And there are other things that are negative besides reprimands, like a demotion, like having your office removed, like losing a salary or a bonus opportunity. If you have a negative consequence, the tendency is that the frequency of that behavior will go down. In other words, people don't like negative consequences. So it will go down. Remember, though, what is negative to somebody is what's negative to them. And so that you think that you might be taking away something that's important, but they don't care about it, it's really not negative. The same way for appraising. If you say to somebody, you've done such a great job, here's a little extra pay, and they don't care about money, but what they want is more responsibility, that's not necessarily a positive consequence. So positive consequences increase the frequency of a behavior. Negative consequences, if it is perceived as negative, decrease the frequency of that behavior. Now, what about no response? Suppose you work hard and perform or do something and nobody pays any attention. Initially, we find that people try harder because they thought maybe you just didn't notice. But after a while, when people continue to not notice, what happens to the frequency of that behavior? It tends to go down and goes down even faster than after a negative consequence. So as you look at those three consequences, which is the only one of the three that tends to increase the frequency of a behavior? It tends to be the positive one. And yet, what is the most frequent consequence that people get to their performance? No response, negative. No response, negative. Leave alone, zap. Leave alone, zap. That's not very motivating. Now, in relation to the ABC model, let me just lay out for you how you go about training someone, because it falls right into this pattern. Because remember, you have a choice of hiring a winner, somebody knows how to do it already and has experience, or hiring a potential winner and training them. There's five steps to training somebody. Tell them what to do, then show them what to do. It's the old show and tell. Both of those are part of 1 minute goal setting, and they are both activators. Then after you show and tell, you delegate is the third step, which is you say, let me see you try it. And now the person is engaging in the performance or behavior desired. Now, when you delegate, do you leave them alone and run off? No. You hang around for the fourth step, which is observe performance. Why do you want to observe performance? The reason you do is you want to manage the consequence. In other words, you want to be there to deliver something after they begin to perform. If you leave them alone and run away and they fail and come back and hit them, that's the old leave alone zap. So the fifth step is praise progress. What you want to make sure that you know is that good performance is a journey, not a destination. And that a goal is a destination, but as a manager, if we don't help manage that journey by managing the consequences, we may never get to the end or the destination at all. So we have tell, show, delegate, observe, and praise progress. Now you might ask, well, what happens is if you go through all of those steps and they don't even make any progress? Do you praise them anyway? No. Do you reprimand them? No. Do you ignore them? No. What you really do is you go back to show and tell. In essence, what you're doing is you either praise progress or redirect. And so redirect in many ways is a fourth consequence where you really go back to the activator and ante up. So the ABC model is a really nice way of summarizing When you sequence what of the three secrets of the one-minute manager? And if you look at performance of your people, if they're not performing well, one of the questions you want to ask is their performance an activator problem? Meaning maybe you haven't trained them. Maybe they aren't sure what they should be doing. Maybe you're not providing the help. You can go right down the Achieve model and check. Or is it a consequence problem that when they perform it, nobody seems to pay any attention? And as a result, the frequency of that behavior goes down. In some cases, it's both an activator and a consequence problem. But the issue is mainly, where is the problem area and the activator, the consequence aside? Now, which do you think is more important to put your emphasis on, the activators or things that go before performance, or the consequence, things that go after? When we ask people that, most of the time they put the higher emphasis on the activator. They think that the goal setting is important, when in reality, really only 15 to 25% of the impact on performance comes from activators, things like goal setting, where 75 to 85% of the impact on performance comes from what
that's
after people to engage in performance. So behavior is really managed by its consequences. So the ABCs really positions the three secrets of the one-minute manager in a way that makes them easy to use and to follow up and implement on a day-to-day basis. The second concept that the veteran manager learns in putting the one-minute manager to work is the price system. He learns that to really improve performance, you have to pay the price. Now, price, as you can guess, spells five steps to improve performance. P stands for pinpoint. What you do in the pinpoint stage is determine what are the performance areas of interest. In other words, what do you want to work on? Are we trying to improve safety? Are we trying to accomplish quality? What are we doing? What is the behavior of interest? We have worked on all kinds of performance areas, and they vary all the way from sales to absenteeism turnover to shrinkage, where products are going out of stores without stopping passing the cash register. I mean, there's a lot of different things. So pinpoint says, what are we going to work on? Well, interesting one that a friend of mine worked on, Dick Evans, who was working with a restaurant, he worked on friendliness. They asked him to improve friendliness in the restaurant. So the pinpointed area was friendliness. So we can name a lot of things, but in pinpoint, let's be specific. R in the price model stands for record. Once you've pinpointed what you want to work on, you have to be able to measure it. What you're working on in performance needs to be observable and measurable. Otherwise, we can't do anything with it. So in the record step, you say, how are we going to measure it? You know, what is the safety record right now? What is the productivity rate? What is the efficiency? Where are we now in absenteeism turnover? You have to really work on that. In the friendliness thing, it was interesting is that if you say to somebody, we want to improve friendliness, you know, well, what does friendliness mean? Well, most people would say, well, it means friendliness. So the job after pinpointing friendliness was to find out, how do you determine what a friendly waiter is if we're working in a restaurant? The best way is to go out and ask customers. And in asking customers what makes a friendly waiter or a friendly receptionist, one of the things that they said that a friendly waiter, a friendly receptionist, a friendly bank teller is someone who talks to you about non-business related items, like, you know, what do you think of the weather? How long have you lived in town? How's the family? Where are your kids going to school? Those are non-business related topics. Now, what about business related? Well, the business related topics are, you know, the specials for today are, would you like a glass of wine? You know, all those kinds of things. So recognizing that the friendliness piece has to do with non-business related versus business, now what you need to do is count it. We worked with a bank around friendliness, and that was an interesting thing. And what we did is we just stand and observe the tellers for periods of time to count not only how many times they talked about non-business related versus business related. In other words, every time they changed the topic, what was it? But we also looked at the duration. How long did they talk about each? And this one particular bank we worked with, it turned out upon gathering information in the record step that they were 5% friendly. And it was a really efficient bank. You know, you got your transactions done well, but it was a really cold place. People didn't kind of hang around it. So the point I want to make on the record step is whatever you're working on, you got to find a way to measure it. If you can't measure it, we can't do anything with it. Now, some people will say, well, you can't measure my job. Well, our response to that is, well, then why don't we eliminate it? It's amazing how quickly they get interested in finding some way to measure it. You got to measure performance if we want to really have an impact on it. Now, the I step stands for involve. In the involve step, now you start bringing the people to play that can impact the performance. So if we are trying to improve the friendliness of bank tellers, we have to involve the tellers. We want to involve them in three aspects. First is goal setting or performance planning. And what you're doing is that if we found out that they were 5% friendly, then what we need to know is, well, how friendly we want them to be. 65% friendly, 70% friendly. I mean, it kind of sounds kind of silly, but the reality is how friendly do you want people to be? I mean, you can get the place so they're so friendly, but people are angry because they're waiting in long lines because the tellers are being so friendly. So we had to set a goal in terms of how friendly they wanted. In this one particular bank, they decided that they wanted the tellers to be 35% friendly. In other words, you know, wanted them more than a third of the time engaging in friendly discussion, but they didn't want them to get carried away. But it certainly was better than 5% friendly. So what you're doing is you're setting a goal. Now, what we recommend is that the goal be set down on a graph. In fact, you can start the graph in the record stage. And all the graph indicates is along the horizontal axis is time, and you indicate when you're going to be measuring it. And suppose we had a graph with 1 through 7 along the bottom. That could be one day, that could be 1 week, 1 month, 1 year. The shorter the duration between when you are going to measure and give feedback, the more helpful, particularly in the beginning. Along the vertical axis, you put the behavior of interest, the pinpointed area. So on the friendliness, you would have a graph that on the bottom would start from 5% friendly, say moving up to, if the final goal was 35% friendly, then that would appear on the graph. And then if it was 1 through 7 counted for days, now every day that somebody observed the teller for a period of time, they could give them a score. Now, in the first week, do you think you can move somebody from 5% friendly to 35% friendly if they haven't been that before? That might be a little big jump. So maybe the first week you want to move them from 5% to 15 or 20%. So what you want to do on your graphs is set the final goal where you're going and where your present performance is, but you want to have bite-sized interim goals so that people can see the journey from where they are to where they want to be. So the first part of the involve is setting the goal. And you'll notice we don't set the goal without the people involved because they know whether it is reachable, and a goal needs to be reachable. We don't want to have goals too easy or too hard. We want moderately difficult but achievable goals. The second thing that you involve people in is developing the strategies for coaching. In other words, now that we have set a goal and let's get back to our 5% friendly, trying to move up to 35%, what does the person need to improve their friendliness? You know, how often do you need to stop by to give them feedback? Do they need any training? You know, what kinds of things? Would it be good to videotape them so that they can see how they behave? I mean, what do they need? So we agree on coaching strategies, how often you're going to coach, how it's going to be delivered, and what you're going to do. And then the third part of the involve step is developing strategies for evaluation. Now, when you set the graph up, you're really doing that in the first place so that they know how they're being measured. But there's one other part of the evaluation that you want to do here, and that's the incentive piece that we talked about when we were talking about the ABCs. People got to know, what are the goodies? What's in it for me if I do this? Okay, what's in it for me if I do this? Is it, am I going to get appraising? Am I going to get more responsibility? Is it going to be profit share? What is in it for me? So the involved step in many ways is you are doing all your activator work. You're making sure that you have anteed up the things that they need to perform well. Now, C in the price model stands for coach. See, now what you do is you observe performance and manage the consequences. What you're doing is you are carrying through on your agreements on what you're going to do to coach and help that person win. So coaching is just following up the agreement. It is managing the consequences. And then finally, the E in the price model stands for evaluate. Now we look at the graph, follow it to the end, track performance progress, and then we determine, you know, future strategies. Do we want to continue to be tracking this? Do we want to work on this? Do we want to reset the goal? Where are we? Remember, with the evaluation step is that you never give people new information. What you're really doing is just summarizing what you've been doing all along in the coaching and counseling process. So the price model stands for pinpoint, record, involve, coach, and evaluate. And the organizations that Bob Lauber and his people have worked in and our people have worked in have shown significant performance improvement by taking different areas and making a price project out of it. In fact, Bob and I and our companies are willing to say to people, if you let us put the one-minute manager to work in your organization and implement some of these kind of concepts, if we don't double or triple to your bottom line what you pay us, we'll make up the difference. You might say, well, you know, how do you get so cocky doing that kind of thing? It's simple. Nobody ever follows anything up. Even if we weren't any good, we'd have an impact on what happened there. But the fact that we are good and we have a system like price, we can really make a difference in your performance. Now, one last thing that I want to just leave with you on this tape. At the end of putting the one-minute manager to work, the veteran manager says to the one-minute manager, he says, I think I got it. I'm really excited and I'm committed to implement these things. The one-minute manager said to him, he says, I'm not worried about your commitment. He said, what I'm worried about, though, is your commitment to your commitment. He said, people say diets don't work. He says, diets work fine. People don't work. What they do is they break their agreements. And he said, what you need to do is recognize that you need to give up trying. In other words, what you're going to do in life is either do it or don't do it. When you say, well, I'm going to try to be a one-minute manager, you just set up all the reasons for not doing it. You're either going to do it in life or don't do it. Don't say you're going to try to do it. So you have to say, I am going to put the one-minute manager to work, and I am not only committed to it, but I am committed to my commitment to it, which means that tomorrow I will start to share it with my people. We will sit down and start to make plans on how we're going to use it, and we are going to do it. We're not going to talk about it. So my advice to you is, if you decide to do it, go and do it and have a ball. Your people are going to love it. They are going to perform better, and it's going to be a win-win for you and your organization. Don't go on looking for the next new management concept. Follow up the one that you've just taught your people. Good to be with you, and my best of luck on the application and use of these wonderful concepts.